Mo there, and welcome to yet another of the One Liners Special Edition podcast from the Edinburgh International Film Festival. I am Drew, and he is Scott.
All right.
And we'll just begin with a film I know absolutely nothing about, despite having read about it an hour ago. It's gone straight out of my head, so Scott, please fill us in on Stella.
Yeah, it's a film I chose to see more due to a lack of other choices, rather than particularly wanting to. I was hoping it would be about a strong European lager, but it turns out that's not the case. It's essentially a coming-of-age tale. It concerns the life of young Stella, played by Leora Barbara, who's a girl just starting at a new, fairly upmarket school where she doesn't quite fit in. It's a rich kid's school, and her comparatively humble background as daughter of a cafe-slash-bar-slash-hotel owner marks her apart, but it's really more to do with the difference in her outlook rather than anything to do with the economics. Stella doesn't seek to cause trouble. She remains quiet, unobtrusive, and in large part ignores, but she has very little in common with the others and remains something of a loner. They've all, as she rather assumes, led very sheltered lives where Stella's seen things, perhaps more than strictly healthy for a young girl. Her parents' cafe attracts a fair number of people on welfare, and the perhaps services the less salubrious end of the market, but it's that makes it sound more of a risk than it actually is. There always seems to be a friendly atmosphere, even if it is full of ex-cons. Stella's more bothered by the lack of attention paid to her by her parents, although again, this seems to be more due to a lack of time rather than a lack of love, bar work by its nature having fairly long hours. Stella's not completely friendless, however. When back at her grandmother's house for her holidays, there's the similarly marginalised Genevieve to chum around with, but far more important to Stella becomes Gladys, an unlikely pairing, with Gladys being a straight A student and Stella being completely disinterested in anything the school's attempting to teach her. However, their friendship eventually changes this, with Stella picking up an affection for reading and eventually finding some subjects to apply herself to. As a drama about personal development, Stella is entirely reasonable and charming, purposefully avoiding the usual insistence on inserting arbitrary drama bombs into places where they have no right being. I'm thinking here of films like Kids, where the child's involved lives have so little in common with anything I experienced at the time that I just have no hope of finding any common ground with them. Stella, however, feels like a kid that could have stayed down the street from you, and combined with a lovable performance from the young lead actress, it produces a charming and effortlessly watchable film. I may not have chosen to go and see this, but it turns out I'm actually quite glad I did. It's reasonably recommended.
So you're suggesting perhaps I ought to have pulled myself out of bed this morning to have seen it?
It wouldn't have been a wasted decision, no.
Oh, okay. I might get a chance to check that out at some point then.
Fair enough. One film we both got a chance to see was Pontypool. Drew, your thoughts?
Yes, tell us about it first. It's Valentine's Day in a small Ontario town, and local radio host Grant Mazzey is getting his morning show going when strange reports begin to filter into the station of peculiar goings-on in the town. As more information is gathered and a disturbing eyewitness report by the station's own traffic report is received, it becomes apparent that yet another zombie apocalypse is occurring in a remote settlement. The twists on the genre staples here, though, are that for much of the film we neither see nor hear the zombies, but rather we discover what is going on through snippets of information from the police, witnesses who call into the radio station, and amongst others, the good old BBC. Now, as the menace moves closer, the radio station employees must protect themselves and try to work out how to stop themselves from being infected and turning into yet more zombies. Based on his own novel, Pontypool Changes Everything, Tony Birdsey's script, deftly directed by Bruce MacDonald, using the confines of the radio station to create a good sense of claustrophobia and reinforcing the feeling of the character's isolation from the outside world. There's a superb strong performance from Stephen McHattie, who plays Mazzey brilliantly as the DJ moving through washed up alcoholic disinterest to mockery, to voice of reason and information, and finally to the edge of hysteria, all with a healthy dose of deliciously black cutting humour. He receives good support too from Lisa Hull as his producer, though I found it hard to take the character of Dr. Mendez seriously. I freely admit this is likely to be my fault though, as I have the same problem with anyone who reminds me even a little of Groucho Marx. I think it must be the facial hair. It's very much a film of two halves, with the first half being by far the more successful. Not being able to see the events outside, you've got to use your imagination and knowledge of the zombie genre to conjure up a mental image of what's going on, which is pleasantly different and taxing and stimulating, but in the second half of the film it reverts more to type, and albeit with a decidedly unusual method of infection. And I just felt the film would have been better had it relied solely on viewer imagination and the excellent McHattie to deliver information. And that's not to say it's bad, though. I mean, far from it. It's a very enjoyable addition to the zombie genre, and it certainly makes suggestions of a sequel set outside in the midst of the action at the same time as the film's events well worth considering. God, I recommend it pretty highly, and if you do go and see it, I encourage you to stay for the duration of the credits and the after credit sequence, which is far more entertaining than those things often are.
Yeah, for once it's actually worth sitting through the credits.
Yep.
Got to agree pretty much completely. I don't really have too many bones to pick with it. I suppose the main one is when they actually try and explain what's going on and how people are being infected. I have a problem with pretty much any horror that tries to explain the inherently inexplicable, because there's just no point. It's just going to always come across as stupid. You might as well just go, yeah, there's zombies.
Yeah.
There's no point explaining that. That's a waste of time. And I understand why they had to, or they felt they needed to actually start bringing some physical threat in, because otherwise it could possibly have played out its trick before the time was over. But it does work a lot better when it's just relying on Stephen McKay's excellent performance to bring the sense of dread and just tighten up the atmosphere. But yeah, even those little niggles aside, it's one of the most imaginative twists on the horror genre I've seen in years. And on that basis alone, if you've been a passing interest in it, you should really go and see it. It's very enjoyable and it's very funny.
It's nice to have your imagination taxed a little rather than everything being put up on screen for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay then, so move from a low-budget Canadian film to a distinctly higher-budget American film. This is a romantic comedy from Hollywood. And before you switch off in complete disinterest, this is supposed to have something of a twist on the usual conventions of that genre. So, Scott, tell us about that.
Oh dear, it's another relationship drama with someone with mental health issues. Basically, the twist that you mentioned here is that one of the protagonists, the titular Adam, played by Hugh Dancy, has Asperger's syndrome, the very same condition afflicting Max from this year's so far standout film Mary and Max. Essentially, this means he's going to have a very literal mindset. He will have great trouble taking people at their word and basically has trouble with most common social interactions. So when a new neighbour, Beth, played by Rose Byrne, moves in, there is some attraction eventually, although the rom-com genre is somewhat subverted by Adam flipping out every now and again, otherwise innocuous statements. Now, it's not a terrible film. It's actually fairly enjoyable, but it's almost in spite of the script rather than because of it. There's very likeable performances from Hugh Dancy, Rose Byrne, and also a charismatic performance from Peter Gallagher as Marty, Beth's dad. The problems that it has is it can't shy away from the usual thing of just dealing out extremely trite homilies about mental health issues, and the usual sort of, oh, we can learn from these people who have got mental health issues, blah 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 blah, all the usual stuff that comes with it. However, it's funny in places. It's never offensively obvious with the things that it says. It does make a few concessions. It's trying to subvert the genre stereotypes. It doesn't go for the obvious happy ending, so it's obviously aware that it's playing fast and loose with what people are expecting, but it's a strange mix of complete cliche and things you might not expect to be in there. It's a little bit of a mess, but it is slightly produced. It's quite funny. It's fairly decent date movie fodder, which is about all you can expect for, given the number of absolutely god-awful rom-coms that I've seen. It's a label you can apply to pretty much all of them as terrible, but this is one of the better ones. It's quite charming. It's funny enough to get away with its occasional ventures into clichésville. It will be getting a massively wide release, I imagine, fairly soon. It's one of the more mainstream releases at the festival this year, so
it's already had trailers in front of such low-budget niche films as Terminator Salvation. So that'll give an idea as to how widely released it's likely to be.
Yeah, it's worth a look, but there's far better films that you'll see at the festival. But it's not a bad choice if you've nothing else to go and see it. Certainly it's a far better choice than Terminator Salvation was.
Oh, yes, I would imagine so, even without having seen it. But yeah. Then again, it still seems like an odd film for a film festival, particularly given it's the film that's been picked to close the film festival. It's the closing gala film. It just seems slightly odd.
Oh, it is slightly odd. This, I think, terms more for the kind of business decision rather than finding new films. But it'll be the same with Ice Age 3, because that's getting shown, isn't it?
Yes, because so, that's very much the typical festival film.
Yeah, so I suspect more of the business end than else, but even if you don't catch it during a festival, it's worth having a look for it at some point down the line.
I think from hearing what you said as well, though, but I could quite confidently said before it, without having seen it or heard anything about it, that if you want to see any sort of film about a character with Asperger's syndrome, though, you really ought to watch Mary and Max, which you mentioned earlier on too.
absolutely a far better film and far more touching and curiously far more realistic despite being claymation.
Yeah.
From rom-coms to zom-coms, Romeo and Juliet versus The Living Dead. Drew, what's that all about?
Well, I think actually there was a film, I think it must have been Shaun of the Dead, was referred to as a rom-zom-com, and this could very much be one of those two. Not a second zombie film for this podcast. But as I like zombie films, huzzah, says I. I spent quite a while thinking about just what I should say about this film, then realised it was time ill spent, as all I need to, and really all I can say, is that it's Shakespeare with zombies. You know, if only zombies had featured in Shakespeare at high school, I'm sure I'd have applied a great deal more attention to the work of the bard than I did back then. And I imagine most people will be familiar with the plot of Romeo and Juliet. It's a couple from warring families who fall in love with each other, with the most tragic of consequences. This is exactly the same, only with zombies. The Montagues, stroke Living Dead, are a subset of humanity who are employed in low-paid service jobs, while the Capulets are the wealthy human elite. Now, that could probably quite easily, and perhaps correctly, be read as commentary on social class, but first and foremost, it's Shakespeare. With zombies. This has both the look and feel of a student film, albeit a highly polished one, but it matters not a jot, and nor does its clearly low budget with, for instance, zombie makeup straight out of the local joke shop. And all involved clearly know the genre, as well as knowing Shakespeare, and they play it all for laughs, and fortunately it does it very successfully indeed. And really the only problem is that it's too briskly plotted for its own good, and by the end of its really quite short 84-minute running time, it's run out of steam. The non-Shakespeare climax feeling decidedly tacked on just to set up a final bit of story which runs through the end credits. And that said, it's an enjoyable watch though, and it left me at least spending most of the day mildly amused by saying the word MEP, which is pretty much the zombie's entire vocabulary. And possibly, and I think how that ought to be applied to other Shakespeare to make it more interesting. To be, or not to be, that is a MEP. I get easily amused by things like that, folks.
It's maybe not the most sophisticated of comedy outings, but it's just so good-naturedly enthusiastic about the whole thing. Complaining about it seems churlish, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very entertaining. It's fun. It's not that common. You can see films that are very enjoyable and very good, and somebody's very funny. You don't often see films that are just downright fun, and this is. Because the cast clearly had a lot of fun making it, and that shows through. Only the one really remarkable thing about it, though, is that I want to point out, is that this is a film in the Edinburgh Film Festival's Under the Radar section, which pretty much makes it, I think, the exception that proves the rule.
Well, because it's good, not terrible.
Yes, exactly. This is the one good film I've seen under that banner.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a lot. I believe it's from a comedy troupe that does this sort of thing before, because I notice at least one of them has a credit for Hamlet the Vampire Slayer. Sounds equally awesome. But yeah, there's not much not to love in a film where Friar Lawrence is changed into a car mechanic from the Deep South, sending a messenger to the banished Romeo in order to ensure that when hearing that Juliet's poison-induced semblance of death, he will not lose his shit and eat a bus full of school kids.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, actually. I was thinking about the essay for a little bit. It's that sort of humour that's in it.
I've got to give a mention particularly to Ross Kelly, who plays Paris, but it's Paris reimagined as a hooting, hollering frat boy, and he's hilarious. Yeah, the whole film's just really funny. I'm glad it's not longer. I could maybe have done with losing about 10 minutes off it, to be honest, but it is a one-joke film, but it does that joke so well that it just pulls it off. Yeah. Definitely worth a check.
Meh. Okay, then we move on to our last film for this podcast, which is set in Italy, but it's an American film by the legendary, for good or bad, Dario Argento, starring Oscar winner Adrian Brody. So, Scott, what about Giallo?
Giallo, the name of a film, also the name of a subgenre, and particularly one that Argento himself pretty much created, a sort of middle ground between murder mystery and thriller and slasher film. Now, Argento had produced some pretty fine works of suspense and in the giallo genre back in the early and late 70s. Films like Bird with a Crystal Plumage and Deep Red. It was noted for effective builds of tension and strong visual stylings. However, his work of late has, we'll politely say, it's fallen a good way short of this high watermark. Less politely, you could say they've been bloody awful. It was hoped that this would bring him back to a place of triumph. In many respects, this is a massive failure, and it's also a massive success. He appears to have distilled the essence of giallo into a fine concentrate and then ignored that and gone with the crappy bits. So he's gone with the ham acting and the stupid plots and everything. But right, perhaps getting ahead of myself. Inspector Enzo Avolfi is Adrian Bode's inspector. He's on the trail of a serial killer whose MO appears to be kidnapping any pretty young girls that get into his taxi cab and doing horrible, horrible things to these poor unfortunates. One of these victims appears to be Celine, who's the fashion model younger sister of Linda, who's just arrived in town. She turns to Enzo to help find out her sister's fate, and eventually the two, for reasons of pretty much narrative convenience, join forces to take down the killer, revealing Enzo's tragic backstory along the way. The thing about this film is that it is atrociously cliché-ridden, completely tension-free, but it is utterly, utterly hilarious. Adrian Brody is... I have no idea what he's doing here. When he's in his Inspector Enzo mode, he's running around like a third-rate Al Pacino impersonator.
Right, so obviously he does think he's just channeling Serpico there, doesn't he?
And he is, just very, very badly. And I don't know whether I should reveal this. The serial killer Yellow is credited as Byron Deirdre, which your anagram generators will be able to tell you fairly quickly, as if 2 minutes in the film wouldn't. There's an anagram of Adrian Brody, because he's playing the bad guy running around with some terrible, terrible prosthetics on, burning out of laser.
Just to anybody listening thinks we may have spoiled this for them.
It's neither relevant nor interesting, is it?
Yeah, the fact that he's playing a serial killer is entirely irrelevant.
Yes.
And it's really obvious as soon as you first see him put on, because if you know what Adrian Brody looks like, quite a distinctive nose right there.
Yeah. Plus, if you don't know what Adrian Brody looks like, he's in the film, so that's a good thing. So yeah, when he's in his bad guy mode, he's just gurning about with this ridiculous Super Mario accent, and it's absolutely laughable.
But he's clearly having the time of his life, though, and I don't know if you were going to mention this, Scott. I was watching it, and I still couldn't quite make up my mind whether he knew it was that bad, and I'm sure he must, and that he was just doing it for fun. I was thinking, he's won an Oscar, he's quite highly regarded for some of his work. I'm thinking, he must be having a laugh. Then I kept thinking, he was in The Village, though. And that's all sorts of shitty. But, no, I think he's just having fun with it. And I've seen Emmanuel Senior, whose name I've never been absolutely sure how to pronounce, but Roman Polanski's wife anyway, I've seen her in plenty of other things where she's not this bad, so I'm guessing everybody's just either having a really off day.
She has got to get special credit, because she is breathtakingly awful. It's sort of professionally awful that could only ever come from a lifetime of study and perfecting the art of the awful performance. It really takes several biscuits, if not the entire packet. Thankfully, we weren't the only people sort of pissing ourselves laughing at this laughable display. I think most of the rest of the screening room was as well. If you view this as a giallo, as you may be expected to do from the title, then it's a horrible failure. There's no tension, there's no drama, there's no suspense. If you view this, however, as a comedy, it's fantastic. I don't think I've laughed so much at any other film during this festival, and probably only about one other film this year. It is tremendously funny. I can only hope that it is supposed to be funny. I'm reading something earlier saying that Argento himself's trying to distance himself from this film due to producer interference. Now, given Argento's recent work, I'm only assuming that the producer saw what had happened and decided to tweak it into a comedy. this would fit with what the result has been. Yeah. So if you're in the mood for a laugh, definitely go and see it. It's bloody hilarious.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out, just to clarify for people, why I made particular mention of it not just being us laughing. The staff of the one-liner have pretty warped sense of humour anyway. A very low tolerance for shite. And for instance, when we're in Antichrist a couple of days ago, and the stupid talking fox came on screen, which is still making me giggle.
Chaos reigns! Thank you, Mr. Fox!
Go spend your time with polar bears instead. No, there was myself, Scott, one or two people around us, and that's it, in a very big cinema, with the only people that laughed, that everybody else was taking it deadly, deadly seriously.
Despite the fact that it was a talking fox. You can't really signpost stupid much. I'm still angry about this.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, but it was only a handful of people laughing at it, but that's kind of a common experience for us, that other people taking the film seriously, thinking of something good, and we'll just, and our third member, Craig, too, will be pissing ourselves laughing at stuff that other people think is great. Clearly it's not, and presumably if you're listening to this, you fall more into our thinking of things, but in Giallo, fortunately, pretty much the entire cinema was laughing at the same time as us. So I think it was intended to be funny.
I can only hope so, because there's so many moments of absolute comic genius and just perfect comic timing that if it was an accident, it would be... Well, by the laws of averages, it could not possibly be done accidentally. This must be deliberate. And so I choose to think of it as a comedy, and it's a brilliant comedy.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, it's not just the time and stuff. It's just even the camera moves. There's one particular notable moment where Adrian Brody and Emmanuel Senior are in his office, and he imparts some bit of information to her. And there's this ridiculously artless Crash Zumenhor face, which possibly you can imagine seeing in one of the Evil Dead films, and therefore you'd know it'd be a joke, or some rotten 1970s grindhouse type film. And it's like, it's got to be a joke, right? And her performance is impressively awful.
Yeah,
I don't remember it being that bad in anything else I've seen her in. So, but yeah, it's a comedy, and it's intentionally so. Must be.
Arguably, that was part of the intent. I mean, the Giallo stuff really had its heyday in the 70s, so trying to harken back to that sort of time is possibly intentional, but even so, it's still funny. Yeah. So that's the bottom line. It's really funny.
That's all from us for today. We'll be back with you for one more podcast from the Edinburgh International Film Festival, covering the final few films that we've seen and giving you a rundown of the best and the worst of the fest. So until then, I've been Drew, and Scott has been Scott.
Goodbye. Bow, bow, bow.